Yes.
May I make some additional comments?
Sure, please.
Firstly, I would say that if you talk about Soviet rock of the 80s, it's not so homogeneous phenomenon. It's very multi-level, and there are some problematic figures in the perception of audience and in modern Russian audience as well. For example, in my personal opinion, Alla Pugacheva has nothing to do with Russian rock, and it's very popular opinion among not only my contemporary Russian youth, but among the people of the ages. And in Troitsky, it's clear that she had some connection with Russian rock community, but I mean Soviet rock community, but she was never in these milieus. And among the female rock figures in Soviet rock, I would recall maybe there were not many. Maybe just.
So who are you trying to recall?
Nastya Polyva. It's the singer from Sverdlovsk who had her own band Nastya, and Zhanna Aguzarova from Brava. The leader, very eccentric and very popular female figure in Russian rock, already in the 80s. Then about Mashina Vremeni, it's not so much rock idols because there were popular opinion, I think, since middle 70s, when Makarevich made a contract with Rosconcert, its official organization, and he and many his former fans decided, well, Makarevich sold himself and his band, now he's in this estrada milieu among these jolly guys and samotsvete pesniry and so on. And he was not very much respected among the very underground audience, unlike Grebenchikov, who went on going his line, and his band's scandalous performance in Tbilisi in the festival in the 1980 was something.
It was Gori Festival.
Georgia.
Gori Festival.
Gori.
In Tbilisi, but in according to Troitsky, it was in Tbilisi at the festival in the 1980. Well, but because in all the sources it's so, and I mean that Grebenchikov made scandalous performance in punk style because it was a period when Aquarium was very much influenced by punk, and they lost their jobs after that, they lost their positions in university.
Yeah.
So it was, for them, it was problematic, but they won. And they won public recognition. And they became heroes for the young. Whereas Makarevich was straight rock, if to put it, rock warriors. And also, it's very interesting to talk about political political agenda of Soviet rock bands, because it's not so simple. For example, Grebenchikov was never very much engaged in it. He was rather ignored to political issues. Shevchuk was, of course, if true.
I didn't say it all had to be political. I said that it had to be meaningful. Meaningful. It had to be something worth thinking about.
Yes.
Because a lot of these lyrics weren't directly political, but they were getting like, what are you doing with your life? What about your identity? These things are meaningful. That when you listen to a Russian rock band, especially a Russian band, it was supposed to be saying something besides, oh, what a pretty sky it is. Oh, how nice it is. It's a lovely day. That would be, the curse of Estrada, as I understand it. But on Pugacheva, I will admit that when I listen to her music, I don't hear it as rock music. But it's so often, she's so often included in the context of rock music, so I felt like, who am I to expel her? And she's clearly, has been a dominant, absolutely dominant prop. I think that she's clearly the most popular and most successful female vocalist in Russia of the last quarter of a century. So, you know, she's still 30 years, let's say. So I think she certainly deserves, I would have felt very guilty leaving her out of the discussion, even if her rock credentials are not entirely clear. By the same virtue, if I were doing a lecture on Yugoslavia, I would include Laibach. And you could then raise your hand and say, well, Laibach isn't exactly a rock group, that what they're doing is something else. And that's absolutely true. It's been called an art group. It's been called an innovative group, et cetera, et cetera. But it's part of the rock milieu. And the people, you know, you said yourself that Alla Pugachova was mixing with the rock musicians and was part of that milieu. And Laibach, by the same virtue, part of the rock milieu, friends with the other Slovenian rockers, with groups that have been unmistakably recognized as rock groups. So I think in any category of music, you pick a category and you say, okay, we're going to talk about the Baroque. And then you find some piece of music and you say, well, you know, is this Baroque or is this like some borderline? Is it going to the next category? What is this? So I don't think that should alarm us. I mean, this is life. Makarievich, I take your point. I mean, you're absolutely correct that after a while, what he did changed. But you see, he made this group. It was a rock group. Mashina Vremeni was, by some accounts, the greatest rock group of its time, or, you know, together with Aquarium. So I don't think that would, you know, take away that title from him. And I found myself thinking of Ernest Hemingway, as you were talking about this. So what's the connection with Hemingway? Well, you know, Hemingway, I once decided I was going to read all of Hemingway's novels. And after a certain point, I said, I've had enough. I did the same with George Bernard Shaw and William Shakespeare, and I dare say I've read more Shakespeare, more Shaw, and more Hemingway than probably most people alive on the planet. And in each one of these cases, what I found is that eventually these people ran out of steam. And started to produce stuff which, you know, across the river and into the hills. Anybody read that here besides me? Hemingway novel? Or Torrents of Spring, another Hemingway novel? If you go home and read these, you will curse me for having even mentioned these, I think. Does that mean I don't respect Hemingway? No! Hemingway was fantastic! But this was not at his most fantastic. Or how many of you have read Cymbeline by Shakespeare? Well, you've read Cymbeline. And?
As you said,
it has its moments.
It has it, yeah.
How about Henry VIII by Shakespeare? How about, I read that, my judgment, I hope Shakespeare will pardon me, but I think it's an awful play. Pericles, another Shakespeare play. I think that was pretty awful too. What about Macbeth? Well, they were great. I mean, fabulous. One of the best things ever written by anybody. So, I don't want to, you know, do a subtraction where we say the later things detract from the earlier achievements. We still give the credit for that. Shakespeare was still potentially the greatest playwright of all time. Certainly one of the greatest, goes without saying. And Makarievich, certainly one of the greatest rock musicians of
Russia. No, just add some comments about the popular attitude and about the situations. I would not argue. I just add some more information.
No, I appreciate
about
that.
The situation, because
I thought you were looking for some sort of dialogue. So
Well, would you try to define what genre, like, what genre is for you, like, how you define what genre? You know, the meaning of the word genre in this sense. How did you decide, let's say, like, this is a rock music? I mean, was it only by, you mentioned at a certain point, like, that you actually decided on the basis of lyrics, but was it the only thing?
Well, usually a genre is defined by several things, really, and this is why it's murky. A genre is defined by what conventions it's observing, including rhythmic conventions. We all know what a waltz is, but Lacni Fronts, a Slovenian group called Hungry Frank, proved that you could have a rock waltz. clearly rock music, and clearly 3/4 time, clearly a waltz. I've heard other rock waltzes since then, but I remember that one because it was the first time I heard a rock waltz. But usually we don't think of that instrumentation is certainly a part of what defines the genre. If you get a 200-piece orchestra and you have a conductor in the, you know, the tails, and it's a setting too, the concert hall, and he's up there conducting this, you know, is what is that? If you do an orchestral arrangement of I Want to Hold Your Hand with 120 players doing I Want to Hold Your Hand, that's probably not rock anymore, even though it was written in a rock setting. So I think some of this is murky. The fact that the Russians and the Soviets, the Russians especially, were keen on defining rock in terms of the lyrics was something very, very special. And you know, I understand it intellectually, but I don't really understand it emotionally. Because for me, rock is about, you know, sort of hard driving, pulsing beat, and being danceable. And if you can't dance it, you know, it's not for me rock. You know, sort of a maybe personal definition. But
there are some questions there. Yes, you.
Since one of your expertise,
louder.
It's the Yugoslav rock scene. Could you share some reflections on it, especially your personal experience when you were traveling through Yugoslavia and doing these interviews and field research? Would you say there was a shared Yugoslav cultural space since last time we heard other arguments that there were very different countries within a country? Or, so your personal impression.
Well, it won't surprise you that my answer to the question about the shared Yugoslav space is yes and no. But basically, you had in Yugoslavia, Socialist Yugoslavia, 8 federal units. And there was a shared musical space which embraced Croatia, Bosnia, and Serbia mainly, and mainly their major cities. Because the performances, Bora Djordjevic or Barani Valjak or Vatreni Poljubac would be wanting to perform in large cities and not out, for the most part, in villages. The Slovenes were culturally in their own world for a very long time, and I think it was when I was there in 89, I've been so many times to sort of keep track of which visit was which is sometimes a little bit weird, but I was in 5 of the republics plus Vojvodina on that visit, and what hit me when I went to Slovenia was that Slovenes were not listening to Serbian or Croatian or Bosnian groups. They were not paying attention to the issues in those places. They didn't really care. They were into their own world, and to the extent that they were interested in things outside of their borders, it was to the north and the west, and not south. Macedonia, you know, the language barrier in Macedonia, of course, you had that early Slovenian rock group Bulldozer, which sang in Serbo-Croatian precisely in order to cross republican boundaries. But after that, the people preferred to either sing in Slovenian or, as the case of Leibach, in German, out of weirdness, provocation, and good, very good commercial sense. Oh, I mean, they've done very, very well. There was a group, what was that name of that group? They put out the song Blato, and Domination and Surveillance. I can see the album in front of me. It was an
Borghesia,
S&M.
Is it?
Huh?
Borghesia, is it?
Yeah, thank you. Borghesia, yeah. Thank you. Ah, so you're on top of this. Borghesia, yeah. I met the manager for Borghesia and watched some of their videos together with her, bought all the albums I could get. And this is a group that was celebrating S&M. But I mean, you know, with celebrations of S&M, with, you know, songs like Whip Me, this is being recorded. I can't give you any more lyrics than that. Otherwise, who knows what will happen. But the lyrics were very provocative, and it couldn't go on mainstream media. This wouldn't have been a possibility. The Macedonians were off in their own world. They had Lebi Sol, which was able to cross the boundaries, but another excellent group, Mizar, with the sort of liturgical stuff going on. Oh, fantastic group. Very imaginative, not unique, but you know, very good. I mean, there's a certain genre for that in Spain. In might be an equivalent in Estonia, in Speranza in Spain. So there wasn't. And Vojvodina had, you know, it's a sort of mix of like folk and rock and stuff. That, and then of course later with Milosevic, you got turbo rock, which was the rockers hated. They said that wasn't rock music.
It's called turbo folk.
I'm sorry?
Turbo folk.
Turbo folk.
The last night, some people were here. There's a video by a Hungarian documentary maker about the kind of the ultra-nationalist rock scene in Hungary today. It's very interesting, so you might want to find that. But my question is, did in the Soviet Union, was there a role in nationalism in rock that played into the politics of the new countries that were to appear afterwards?
Not among major groups.
Why is that?
I think it was because the issues which were on the agenda at that time were for achieving pluralism, opening the country up, liberalization. That sort of backlash against non-Russians wasn't an issue. I mean, you didn't have, you know, if we do a Serbia-Russia non-comparison, let's say, comparing for the sake of disjoining them, with the Serbs, you had, first of all, the Serbs were never a mathematical majority. They were always a mathematical minority in their country. I say mathematical, you know, to make it clear what I'm talking about, less than 50%. But I think that works on people's minds. The Russians were a majority in the country, and certainly within the RSFSR, an overwhelming majority. And for the Serbs, you had the Albanians, who the Serbs would say were stealing the land, and other things that they would say, which I'm sure are well known to everyone here. And there was no real equivalent for that with the Russians. Even when we talk about anti-Russian protests in Estonia or these anti-Russian riots and disturbances in Latvia discussions about, in dissident circles, about Ukrainian secession, this was not at that kind of a level to threaten the Russian mind.
Although some of the musicians became extreme right-wingers after 1899. Mm. I mean, even Viktor Tsoi. So, I mean, there was a potential development from punk.
Oh, I'm sure there was,
some kind of ethno-nationalism. And even Grebenshchikov had this religious...
I didn't know that. The religious I knew, but I didn't know about the nationalist.
I wanted to ask something about the various internal genres of this music. So you were showing rock music from the 60s, like something fairly similar. Were there internal changes? So for example, was punk also something new, or was there a scene that could be called a new wave or analogous to new wave in Russian rock music, which was turning against these older rock bands like Mashina Vremeni?
Well, most of the punk
sold themselves.
Most of the punk was in the Baltics. I mean, there was some punk in Russia, but most of it was in the Baltics, and the Baltics were, of course, more exposed to the West. I mean, among other things, the Estonians could receive and understand Finnish television and radio.
Uh-huh.
So that is one of the reasons why Estonia was very open to influence from the West, more open than the other places. And then, of course, Radio Liberty made sure that the people listening to those airwaves would get some idea of what was going on.
Yeah. So there were no subsequent new styles coming in and trying to sort of make a distinction already within rock and roll to make their own new way of following the Western trends.
Well, when the innovation started, it was precisely efforts to demarcate Russian rock from the West, to find new paths, to give the rock a Slavic soul. And I mean, one of the things that I liked about the Aquarium song, which I picked for tonight, was that I thought that I could hear in it something which was distinctly Russian or Slavic. That this, it did not sound to me like music I would expect to hear coming out of England or the USA. Now, that's very subjective. I mean, I can only speak for myself on that. But you know, there was certainly there were discussions about this throughout Eastern Europe here, including Russia, and efforts to find their own path. And one of the things, one of the earliest manifestations of this were, first of all, to start to sing in the local language instead of singing in English. And to write their own songs instead of singing the songs by Elvis Presley or Beatles or Rolling Stones. And these two things were very important things. And then the third thing was to take up themes that were of interest to specifically Russians or Estonians or Ukrainians or Uzbeks or whatever, taking up those themes, addressing the life issues that the people were confronting, and then sometimes doing some other things that were tapping into the use of some local musical idioms that would be understood locally but maybe not in the West.
I'm sorry, I would say it was very important when the new wave came in 1980s. It spread in the whole world. Not only in the, it came from the West, but it spread to the East. And maybe in the American point of view, the different style was like in America, they lived together in peace. But in the West, rock wasn't just the music where you can dance or not. Rock was like a political statement, and it was very important that who, what style you are a fan of. So, of course, in Russia also, the new styles came, and the new styles always tried to bury the old ones. I don't know exactly the name of the new bands, but there was a lot. Which they wouldn't call them rock band, and they hated the rock bands, they hated all of Pugachev. And they thought that they bring new answers for the new questions. And another thing about nationalism. Nationalism was very interesting that after the changing, it came up first in Hungary, in everywhere, even in Yugoslavia and in Russia too. So while the people had only one enemy, the communist, when the communist gone, they tried to find the enemy among them. And then nationalism came very, very strong. So those people, bands, music bands, they blow it up because suddenly they find out, oh, the guitarist is a nationalist, he hates Jews, and I'm a Jew, so I kick out the guitarist, or like that.
Guitar?
Yeah.
The guitarist.
Sorry, I have Josef was Tito in my mind. So any word that sounds similar to Tito, I immediately hear Tito, sorry. Sometimes we have a drink over dinner, and so we make the salute with Živio Tito, long live Tito.
Yes.
I have a short question. Have you seen the film Assa? Have you seen Solovyov's film Assa?
No, I haven't seen it. I'm sorry.
Just because it's very interesting. On the one hand, this film was for a long time considered as film about Russian rock,
uh-huh.
or rather Soviet rock, but according to interviews with musicians, they all very similarly told that they hated this film and they just agreed very politely to take part, but it's terrible. But I personally like it, and it's just interesting to compare opinions about it. So it's like an emblematic film about Russian rock, Soviet rock, but it's hated, but the musicians themselves or at best ignored.
Yeah, I tried to find excerpts on YouTube, but I didn't have any luck. So I didn't even see excerpts,
I'm
sorry.
It's not bad pictures. It's quite good.
What's the basic plot?
Oh, it's very banal. It's like love triangle, and it's everything happens in Yalta, in winter Yalta, and through the whole plot, songs by Aquarium and Kino, Guzarova and
Zoopark.
Zoopark?
No,
the Zoopark didn't participate. Mostly Grivichikov, of course, and also there were underground artistic group, new artists, which were organized, which appeared in, I think, 81. They also participated in design of this film, and one of the paint of the artist, Sergei Bugayev, was played one of main characters, and he was also a musician. So it was also interesting cooperation in the exactly in the 80s. There were cooperation between underground artists on the one hand and rock musicians on the other hand. For example, Grivichikov had contact with both new artists and Mitski, two main underground groups. In the artistic groups, and this all is very good reflected in us. And I'm wondering why those guys like Tsoi, Grivichikov, and Guzarov say that it's very mediocre film, something boring, and we want to forget that we took part in it.
Well, I mean the film Asa was surely of use for them in giving them some additional visibility. And I think that must have been good. But as for the quality of the film, I mean, I take the point. This is a mixed bag. And after all, you've seen the film. I haven't. Thank you for your contribution.
If you will manage to, I advise you just to look. But there is another good film, The Middle.
Which one?
There is another good film with some rock songs by the band Kino. It's called The Needle, Igla, by Rashid Nugmanov.
Mm-hmm.
So it's also worth to see.
Okay, well, thank you very much for that wonderful set of information and opinions and the mood of listening to Soviet rock from the other side of the
efforts to evoke pleasure. Yeah.
Thank you.